very good and most encouraging to see so many gather tonight. And we make you all very welcome. I know times are busy and people are plenty of pressure and plenty of commitment, so we appreciate your attendance at the meeting. And we trust you remember the few nights, if you're able to make it tomorrow night and Wednesday, that will be a great encouragement as well. Now, we'd like to read from the first epistle to the Corinthians and chapter 15. 1 Corinthians and chapter 15. And just the concluding couple of verses of that chapter, verse number 57. But thanks be to God which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labour is not in vain in the Lord. Now, chapter 16. Now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gathering when I come. And when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. And if it be meet that I go also, they shall go with me. Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia, and it may be that I will abide, yea, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. For I will not see you now by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you if the Lord permit. But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. Now Timotheus, come, see that he may be with you without fear, for he worketh the work of the Lord, as I also do. Let no man therefore despise him, but conduct him forth in peace, that he may come unto me, for I look for him with the brethren. As touching our brother Apollos, I greatly desired him to come unto you with the brethren, but his will was not at all to come at this time, but he will come when he shall have convenient time. I think that will be enough for our reading tonight, just to get started. Just about an hour ago, I had one of the preacher's disappointments and fright. I was with a brother in his home, and he just happened to mention in passing, he said in our Bible reading, he said, we had just finished 1 Corinthians. And I thought to myself, well, it's a very poor job for you to be coming into 1 Corinthians when it has already been dissected and carefully studied by the good brethren here. So I understand you're just through the chapter. I'm not able to manufacture sermons quick enough to switch, and it has been upon my mind to speak upon it anyway, so you'll have to just exercise more patience than even you anticipated having to do. The main subject that I want to, in a very broad sense, what I want to try and speak about in the nights that are before us, is just to take a look at what exactly is the work of the Lord, and what exactly does the Lord want us to be doing. We all are very conscious of the fact that the Lord will soon be here, and our time for service is limited. We wouldn't like to be losing time. We wouldn't want to be putting our energies into his work of which he couldn't approve. So that it's very important for us to have a clear understanding in our thinking of what exactly the work of the Lord is and what kind of thing he would want us to be engaged in and associated with. Now that's the broad subject that we'll be working at. We'll be coming back to that kind of headline time and time again throughout the three meetings. What's the purpose of 1 Corinthians chapter 16? It has often been considered that this chapter is a kind of an appendix to the epistle. That in this chapter the Apostle Paul just pulled together a number of different things that he wasn't able to mention earlier in the letter, and we have a variety of topics introduced here. a book that I was reading today called this chapter just a potpourri of unrelated topics. Well, I'm not sure that it's just an appendix. I'm not sure that it's just a little piece stuck on. If we didn't have 1 Corinthians chapter 16, I think we would be very, very much the loser. How does it fit onto the epistle, and how does it fit into the epistle? One thing that we are absolutely sure about is that the verses we commenced reading with at the end of chapter 15, those verses bring the epistle to a marvelous climax. When we hear the trumpet sounding towards the end of that chapter, when we think of the transformation that will take place with the saints, we shall be changed. When we think of the mighty triumph, death and grave completely conquered, when we think of the mighty burst of thanksgiving, thanks be unto God, which giveth us the victory, we haven't within our hearts the slightest shadow of doubt that the apostle has reached a great crescendo, a great climax at almost the end of chapter 15. We feel that we can't go any further, and we can't go any higher. The great arguments of that chapter, the great theological dissertation of chapter 15 on the resurrection, is all but over. But just before he puts his pen down on that topic, he comes very quickly from theology back to practical things. And that verse that we have heard spoken on 1,001 times that I want to speak upon just a little bit tonight, verse 58 of chapter 15, Therefore, my brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, and so on. He wants the Christians to know that even though we have this great hope, we just don't sit with our arms folded, idly dreaming for the Lord to come. He said, do live with the expectation of his imminent return. But he said, while you're living, be watching and waiting and working. He said, be very, very active for him. Now, I think it's a very precious thing to know that there is such a thing in the world to the present day that can be described as the work of the Lord. Now, the apostle obviously thought that was something that could be defined, and these Christians and ourselves could be involved in it. And he describes it as the work of the Lord. That is, it's not so much people working for the Lord. I think that the work of the Lord is far more the Lord working in and through people. Not so much what we do for him, but we, having put ourselves at his disposal, discover what he can do through us. I would hardly need to mention in a meeting like this that whenever we think about the work of the Lord, there are two things that will just sit very, very closely beside it. One of them is the word of the Lord, and the second one is the will of the Lord. If we are going to engage in his work, we need to be obedient to his word, and we need to be clear about his will. But the point that I'm just making at the minute is this, that it's great to know it's possible for people to be active upon earth and to be engaged in the work of the Lord. He's upon the throne. His activities can still be seen on earth. We know only too well that he's not the only one working. You don't need magnifying glasses, and you don't need special vision or discernment to see in the north of Ireland that the devil's fairly busy. We can see quite a number of his victories and quite a number of his triumphs on every hand, but over against us, it's good to know that the Lord is still working. Now, we haven't only the authorship of this work, it's his work. You know, that's the thing that keeps a Christian with encouragement in his heart in times of difficulty. When the work seems to be very heavy, and when things seem to be slowing up and not going so well, it's a great comfort to fall back on this, that this work belongs to the Lord. He commenced it. He He'll carry it on. He'll bring it to a conclusion. And if I'm conscious that what I'm doing is to be engaged in His work, that gives me confidence to ask Him for His help and for His grace. Because He never started a work that He wasn't able to supply. And He never commenced a work that He wasn't able to conclude. The days when the Sunday school class is getting small, and the gospel meeting is reducing in numbers, and the times when the district is becoming more and more unresponsive, and the work becomes very, very much a matter of pressure and burden, it's great to know that, oh Lord, it's Thy work, and we have to leave it in Thy hands. I'm quite sure that I must be speaking to a Christian in the meeting here tonight, and you're representing assemblies where the work has become very difficult. And if it was just a matter of human energy, it would very, very quickly be exhausted. But it gives it a dignity. And it puts it on an elevated place to know that I'm doing something, and be it ever so simple and ever so ordinary, that it can be described as the work of the Lord. Now the second thing that I want to mention just in this text that comes in, and we'll develop more of these things in a minute or two, you'll see the relevance of what I'm saying if you can just hold on for a few minutes. We don't only want to think about this work that has the Lord as its author, but I want to think about the argument for work. It's His work. Why do we do it? Well, you know, and I'm sure the discussion of the brethren have pointed it out very strongly here in the Bible reading, it has often been pointed out, that this little verse, this exhortation begins with a therefore. And that word therefore opens a window that looks back into the argument of the chapter. In the chapter there have been two great things brought before us. One of the things is the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. Then the other thing that I mentioned a minute or two ago is His return. Now, says the apostle, he said, in light of those two great events, the resurrection in the past and the return in the near future, he said, don't you Christians be losing heart. He says, keep at it. These are the great incentives that we have two great events. We are suspended between the two greatest events in history. The resurrection of the Lord Jesus, His bodily resurrection, and His literal return. And these two things are great incentives to keep our minds in focus. We sing about it at times. The eternal glory scream of heart, the nerve our faith endeavour. So now to watch, to work, to war, and then to rest forever. What we are doing is not a wasted enterprise, because Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And it's not a waste of time, because He's coming back from His glory. We can keep at it. With such strong doctrinal arguments behind us. Another thing that he mentions in this verse to encourage these believers, he mentions the atmosphere in which they engage in work and the association. I love the form of the address that he said. He said, wherefore, my beloved brethren, steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Isn't that a very warm-hearted way in which he speaks to these Christians? My beloved brethren. There's a warmth in it. And there's a closeness. I don't want you to think that I'm critical, but you know, I do fear that the work of the Lord has been greatly hurt and hindered by division amongst brethren. As Christian life progresses, and you find yourself embroiled in one or two difficulties, and if you're in assembly life for any length of time, difficulties will arise, and there will be personality clashes, and there will be disputes that were never expected. And some of those disputes can be very hurtful, and they can leave people emotionally scarred and psychologically damaged. And the trouble is, there are times they can leave behind them a bitterness of spirit. And I have noticed, and the times I've had to watch it in my own heart, I have noticed that once people become bitter in spirit, it affects their input into the work of the law. We should always try to very, very much guard against those wages that would come in to present division between brethren. I'm not talking now about principles. We're not talking about doctrine. We'd better be talking about some of those things before the couple of meetings are over. I'm not talking about those things just as I'm talking about these personality problems. My beloved brethren, if there ever were any group of people that gave Paul plenty of heartache, it was the Corinthians. And before he puts his pen down, he gives them this very warm, endearing form of address. If I were to ask tonight some of you Christians, which assembly caused Paul most grief, you would say what I just said, likely the Corinthians. The Galatians were troublesome enough too, but maybe the Corinthians were. Which assembly caused Paul the most joy? You would say without having to think about it for 10 seconds, oh, it was the assembly at Philippi.
What, and do you know?
The only two people whom he describes as my beloved brethren are the Philippians and the Corinthians. You could maybe describe that, you could maybe understand the Philippians being described like that because they were doing well, but he also gave the very same description to the Corinthians. I would say to all the Christians, let us do our best to keep a tender spirit and to keep a warm heart and to make sure that nothing comes into our personality or to our attitude that will have a hindering effect upon the work of the Lord, because we need to be bound together in a family fellowship in order to keep the work prospering and going on. He does make it very clear in this text that the advancement of this work is going to depend upon a certain amount of application with those who are involved in it. I'm talking now about the word steadfast. My beloved brethren, he said, when you're involved in this work, be ye steadfast. You know as well as I do that it's not so easy to get things done by fits and starts. And it's not so easy to get things done by those who are just half-hearted in the faith. The apostle, it seems to me, he wanted people involved in this work that would really put their shoulder to the wheel, and they'd always be there. So that's the people that we all admire in assembly life. I'm only here for 3 nights. And you'll be very thankful for that. And I don't trouble you very much at all in that way. But you know, what about the people who are here every week? What about the brethren and sisters that hardly ever miss a prayer meeting? And they hardly ever miss a Bible reading? And they hardly ever miss a remembrance meeting? And if it's a gospel meeting, they're there. They're maybe not making much noise. But you know, they're always there. They're all with Adam. Yes. Stickability. You couldn't put them off. Far too many of us are treating the assembly and Christianity like a part-time hobby. We come if we're doing nothing else. I'm not saying there are any good folks at Windsor like that. We come if we're doing nothing else. If there's nothing more important, if we have no leisure or pleasure to attend to, well then we'll go to the meeting and we'll try and give things a little bit of a push. Ah, says Paul, that's no good. He said, this work is so dignified. If it's worth anything, he said, it's worth everything. Yes. It doesn't only require application, but it requires a good deal of affirmation. He says, don't be easily pressed about it. Don't be movable. He said, you need to, if you're going to engage in this work, it seems to me, he gives the impression that there's going to be so much opposition that unless you have your feet well fixed beneath you, it will be very easy to get knocked off the path. Now he said, you need to know what you're doing. And he said, you need to know where you're going. And you need to know what you're aiming at. And he said, once you have it fixed with conviction from the Bible and conviction before God, he said, let nothing blow you off course. Keep at it. And he said, be absolutely affirmed in everything and be abounding. Well, we could preach a good lot about that. And I hardly need to, I've already covered some of it. Abounding in the work of the Lord. That bubbling over with. That giving the thing your maximum. Abounding. You know, there are people, and it seems to me that they just about give their minimum. And they do come, and they do lend a helping hand sometimes. But they always seem to keep on the fringe. And they never get too much involved. And they never become too deeply committed. And they're just keeping the thing down to a bare minimum. As it's called, let your heart and soul spill over. Abounding in the work of God. He said, let your contribution be unstinted. He said, it's the biggest work that's going on in the universe presently. And it's the very best that you can put into it. Indeed, this is one of his favorite words. It would be interesting for some of you, some of the younger believers here tonight. I myself have done it at some time or other. You should take down a concordance or whatever you have. If you want to leave online Bibles now, you'll be able to do things 10 times as quickly. You can get sermons now, you say you get 20 sermons a day. I don't know. I don't know how they work. If you've got one of these, you'll get it very, very quickly, they tell me. You go through the letters of the Apostle Paul and see how often he uses this word abounding. One of his favorite terms. One context in which he uses it very, very often is in connection with grace. He says, there I was, a wretched persecutor. My heart and mouth was full of the strangest blasphemy. But he said, the grace of God abounded. It abounded. He said, it filled over in an immeasurable outflow of grace to a sinner like me. It abounded. And it nearly seems to me as if Paul lived his life with it. He said, if God's grace abounded to me, he said, I'll seek to make sure that my service will abound for him with no stint in it whatsoever. Then you have the assurance. There is something at the end of the verse that gives the thing, puts it into perspective. He says, you know. Your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, it's not work here. It's not work. He has changed from work to labor. Steadfast, unmovable, abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor. Now, what's the difference between work and labor? Well, I think most in the meeting will already know that the word that is used for labor in this verse is a word that has in it the idea of weariness and tiredness. The verb form of it, indeed, as has often been pointed out, is the very word that's translated in John chapter 4, Jesus being wearied with his journey. That's the same word as here, only the different form. The same word as labor. Abounding in the work, that's energy. But he says you can have the assurance that your labor, when it brings you to the point of fatigue and exhaustion, and it has used up your energy. You know, the work of the Lord will be like that. It will use up a person's energy. We need to remember that in spiritual work, there is a dimension to it that's altogether different from other forms of work. I know that students and people in professional jobs and so on, you find yourself mentally exhausted, maybe after a day's constant toil and application. But when it comes to the work of the Lord, sometimes there's physical involvement. Then there's mental involvement. There's emotional involvement. There's psychological involvement. And then above all, there's spiritual involvement. so that in the work of the Lord, whether it's the spread of the gospel, whether it's praying for it, whether it's helping to get people into the meeting, whether it's preaching the gospel, whether it's studying for the Bible reading, helping in the Bible reading, giving a word of ministry, taking part in the meeting, all those things that are involved in the big broad term, the work of the Lord, all those things will draw upon every aspect of the human personality and would leave a man very quickly exhausted. Were it not for those replenishing supplies of the power of the Holy Spirit, that's why we need to be constantly in touch with the Lord for help to do His work. Now, all that I've said, all that, and all that's familiar ground, but I hope even those few remarks I have made will just encourage you Christians to keep going. You know, maybe you're getting tired. I don't know. Tired inviting people. Tired visiting. Tired doing the same thing. Keeping the Sunday school going. Maybe the thing's left to quite a few hands. Much work for a few hands. And it becomes very, very wearisome. Could I say to you, good Christian, take 1 Corinthians 15 and 58 as your model. And keep abounding. And keep active. And keep soldiering on. And keep plodding away. For the assurance is this, that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, that has left one big question unanswered. Yes, I've raised it, but I haven't answered. There is the word of the Lord, people active in it, should be active in it, sticking at it, and so on. What exactly is the work of the Lord? How do we know what's included in that term? What would the Lord want us to be engaged in? Well, that's exactly where I consider 1 Corinthians 16 comes in. And I don't think that it's a piece stuck on to the end of the epistle. Because it seems to me that in these 24 verses of 1 Corinthians chapter 16, the Apostle Paul lets us know exactly some of the variety that is involved in the work of the Lord. It's a multifaceted work. Now we see when we go through it in some of the more detailed parts of it. You'll go through chapter 16, for example, and as well as himself, well, we'll get his own name in it, we'll see that when we come to it towards the end. But as well as Paul's own name, you'll get the names of seven other people. Apollos, Stephanus, and Fortunatus, and Achaicus, and Timothy. Seven other people, Aquila and Priscilla, are there as well. As well as other people, the Apostle Paul will talk about other places. He'll talk about Jerusalem. And he'll talk about Galatia. And he'll speak of Asia. And he'll speak of Macedonia. And he'll speak of Achaia. And before he brings this letter to a close, he just has touched with a few sweeps of his pen the names of places that stretch out for hundreds of miles. You say, why do you mention that? Well, I mention that just for this reason. One of the things about the work of the Lord is that we should appreciate is that it involves many people and it touches many places. There's nothing gives Christians a little bit of heart like keeping an international viewpoint for the work of the Lord. Paul said, don't you just become concerned altogether. We said, do be concerned about it. But he said, don't let your concern be absolutely confined to what takes place in Corinth and takes place in the province of Achaia. He said, you think of the work of the Lord going on in other places. He said, it's going on right across the world. You know, it's good to know, brethren and sisters, that the Lord's work's not limited to the north of Ireland. We are finding it difficult, you know. I may be making a very severe and a very misguided judgment. But I have a notion
I have a notion that maybe 1980, I'm talking just about our own circle. You know, there are other people preaching the gospel and so on in their own way. That's their own business. But in the circle that we move in, I have a little suspicion in my mind that maybe 1997 was just as difficult a year as has been seen in this century. There may have been fewer saved than for many, many years. You would say, well, it'll become very, very difficult in the face of odds like that. I'm not saying that's true. That's just a very rough analysis that I've been wondering about. But apart from whether that is actually true or not, we'll all agree that 1987, for most places in this province, was a considerably difficult year. You say, does it mean the worst? I lifted a magazine the other day and I read about some of those countries in South America, and there were 4 new assemblies founded last. I said, well, that's too good, isn't it? There weren't 4 new assemblies planted here. Likely most of them diminished. You know, I use the expression, everybody uses it, and I know the ground that I'm on here tonight, that is any assembly interested in missionary work, well, I'm in the very place to talk about it. You folks have a very lively interest in the work of the Lord in many parts, and that's good, because that'll keep your spirits up. To hear of the triumph of the Lord in other places, irrespective of what is happening here, that keeps the thing, keeps our vision wide. That's why the Apostle Paul takes the time to mention different people, and he mentions these different places. Now, I want to come in to mention some of the more particular things, the finer things. I want to speak about the collection. Paul and the collection. Then I want to speak about, we'll see how we get on, Paul and his calendar. We'll talk a word or two about that. And then I'll say a word or two about the last verses we read from verses 10 to 12. Paul and his colleagues, he mentions 2 of them, Timothy and Apollos. Indeed, when he's speaking there of Timothy in verse number 10, he says, if Timothy has come, see that he may be with you without fear, for he worketh the work of the Lord, as I also do. It may be of interest to some of you to know that that's the only other place where the expression the work of the Lord occurs in the New Testament, as well as verse 58. Verse 58 of chapter 15 says, all was abounding in the work of the Lord. He uses that same expression only one other time in the New Testament, in chapter 16, and that has confirmed me in my belief that chapter 16 grows out of the end of chapter 15, just like a tree growing out of the root. Now, when we come to verse 1 of chapter 16, in fact, the first 4 verses, he's speaking about a collection. Now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Now, I don't want to speak at length about this tonight, but maybe it's very difficult for us to exaggerate the importance of this in the New Testament, this collection for the saints. You read about it in Romans. There's a great big section of 2 chapters about it in 2 Corinthians. There might be another little veiled reference to it in the Epistle to the Galatians. And here again, in 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul talks about the collection for the saints. Now, some of you are very well aware of what that is, but let me explain it in a minute or two, just for the benefit of the rest. That collection for the saints that's mentioned here was a special collection which the Apostle Paul oversaw, mainly in the course of what we now call his 3rd missionary journey. And he moved over a very wide area of the churches of the Gentiles. He was in Asia, then he came away up into Macedonia, he mentions Galatia, and he also came down into Achaia. I'm maybe taking things for, when I say Asia, that means the church at Ephesus and all those other places. When I say Macedonia, that means the Philippians and the Thessalonians. When I say Achaia, that means the Corinthians and other assemblies around it. The apostles moved in through all those assemblies, and he told them all, he said, there's a collection for the saints. Now, all those assemblies over that area of hundreds, they gather together a tremendous gift that was made for the poor saints in the land of Judea, particularly probably around the area of Jerusalem. Now, a great amount of his time, a great amount of the Apostle Paul's time on this third missionary journey was spent in telling these Gentile Christians about the need of the poor Christians in Jerusalem and in organizing this great collection. You say, but why was Paul so particular? Why did he go out of his way? What contribution does that kind of thing make to the work of the Lord? Sure, that has nothing to do with the work of the Lord. The work of the Lord turned to the preaching and having Bible reading. Well, this passage would let us know that part of the work of the Lord is the support of believers in need in other countries. And these Christians that Paul went to move amongst assemblies, mainly assemblies that he had seen founded, these assemblies were able to have fellowship with believers whom they had never seen face to face. And the gift that was sent from one to the other became a vital bond of fellowship between those two groups of Christians. Now that's part of the Lord's work. I know that, I don't know details of it, but I'm quite confident that I must be speaking here tonight in a place, and you believers have had the privilege, and you've taken full advantage of it, I'm quite sure. You've had the privilege of being involved in the work of the Lord in this very way. And some of the material benefits that we have, you have been allowed to have fellowship with needy Christians in parts of the world that maybe you've never visited, with believers whom you've never seen. You say, but there's nothing spiritual about that, and there's nothing eternal about that. That's just a matter of a social thing. If you had told the Apostle Paul that kind of thing, he wouldn't have believed you. I think he defines this here as part of the work of the Lord. Now, just to move a little stage further. We don't appreciate the significance of this to the same extent in our day. But in the first century, the fact that that gift moved from Gentile hands to Jewish hands was passing over a gulf that had lain open like a gaping void for centuries. For a Jew to accept money from a Gentile, he wouldn't even have accepted food from him. A Jew to accept money from a Gentile, just as big a thing for a Gentile to ever think of putting his hand in his pocket to give money to a bigoted Jew. It was unheard of. It was unbelievable. The very fact that these Gentile Christians were willing to share the material things with Jewish Christians, it was nothing short of a miracle of the grace of God. And they overcame national distinctions. They overcame geographical distinctions. They overcame cultural distinctions. We can do the same. Part of the work of the Lord, I think that even to the present day, the Lord allows need in certain parts of the world so that Christians who are comfortable in other parts of the world have opportunities of sharing and sacrificing for the benefit of the work of the Lord. Now you know that we're all comfortable. I'm just as comfortable as any of you good folks here. We're reasonably well fed. We have great material benefits. And we appreciate them all. I don't think that God expects us to be living on the crust of old Ormo loaves and that kind of thing, and living in hardship and all that. I'm not a kind of a fan for an asceticism or anything like that. Not at all. No, he expects us to enjoy the things that he has given to us and to enjoy them with gratitude in our hearts at the same time. We need to remember that there are people and Christians in the world and there are very little. Some of you people that are 6 or 7 changes of raiment last year, there are some people in the world have been wearing the same thing for the last 10 years. Some of us that can change our car. There are dear believers in parts of the world that never knew what it was to have a car. They couldn't even afford a bicycle. Now let us enjoy what we do have. But at the same time, it's great that we have opportunities to share. It's all part of the work of the Lord, and the Apostle Paul was very, very diligent and dedicated to make sure that this thing was carried through, and he mentioned it in quite a number of his epistles. Now he tells the Christians, it was in this particular case that we are speaking about, it wasn't a gift of things, I think it was a gift of money. And he tells us in verse number 2 of this epistle, how that this gift could be accumulated. Now he says, he says, when I come to Corinth, he says, I don't want it to be a scramble around and a whole panic to try and get something gathered up. No, he says, have the thing organized. And he says in verse 2, he says, upon the first day of the week, he says, let every man put so much by. And so on. And then he says, when I come, he says, it's only a matter of clubbing it together. No panic, and there's no scrum. That's part of the work of the Lord, you know. You say, I thought the work of the Lord was preaching. Well, I want to speak now. I'm coming more down to earth now. I want to remind all of us here that part of the work of the Lord for every one of us is to make sure that the Lord gets us closer. Now, those who are salaried, get the portion of that. I know that I'm speaking here tonight. The widow. Some of you may not have, but you think it's a very large portion to get. You needn't worry about that because the Lord appreciated what the widow did get. But give him a portion. Those who are in employment, those who are in retirement, part of the work of the Lord. I'm also speaking here tonight to students. And I know that you think you're living on a shoestring. And you're just getting through. If you have grants, I hardly know they have grants now. And all that kind of thing. You're just scraping through with very, very little despair. I tell you, part of the secret of your spiritual success will be that even with your limited budget, you give the Lord his portion. Try and make sure that there's a little piece put aside for him. He says, every one of you. Now, I imagine, in fact, I'm quite sure of it, it's not imagination. I know that in the assembly of Corinth there were wealthy people. Chapter 11 tells us that. Them that have. In the assembly of Corinth there were poor people. In the assembly of Corinth there were quite a number of slaves. Yet when the Apostle Paul was speaking about this, setting something aside, he said, every one of you. That this is not just something to touch up a few rich people and a few of the top layers and tell them that they need something for us. We need something for Jerusalem. He said, every member of the assembly shall have a share in this precious fellowship. And he said, the Lord will keep account of it all and it will be rewarded. Eventually. Now, I want to say nothing more really about that as far as putting a little bit aside the first day of every week. It's often been told that it was closely associated with the Lord's Supper. It doesn't say exactly here, now I'll have to be honest with the Bible. It doesn't say exactly that this was led to put in a box or put in a bag or this was set over at the Lord's Supper. It doesn't say that, but mind you, it would seem to me very strange. If he was just telling them once a week to put something aside, well sure it could have been done any day. Thursday would just have been as good as Wednesday, but he asked them to do it on the first day of the week. The day of resurrection. It's a bit like that Old Testament passage when they were looking funds for their prayer at the temple. The man took a box and put a hole in it and he set it beside the altar. The altar was God's sacrifice for the people. And the box was the people's sacrifice for God. And I think it's all very fitting, just as we do, that on the first day of the week, we not only give the Lord his portion spiritually, but we give him his portion materially. And might I say, he's expecting a part for both. There are many that put their arm in their pocket and they wouldn't mind putting 50 pounds in the box. But they would never think of giving the Lord a spiritual portion. And they're kind of hoping that what they give him materially covers up for the other. I think the Lord expects a portion from both ends of our lives. We give him spiritually in our thanksgiving and we give him materially in the way that I mentioned. Another thing that he does mention here, and I'm going to conclude because I know there's some, I'm sure, other work to do tonight. As God has prospered him proportionate and personal and planned, I'm not going over all that different principles of giving that we have. In verse number 3, he tells us, when I do come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. If it be meet that I go, they will go with me. Now he says, everything's going to have to be done right here. And he said, when you have this money all collected and I arrive, he said, I'm not just going to take it and say, I'll take it to Jerusalem for you. He said, as well as the money that I want you to approve and appoint men to come with it. So that when we arrive in Jerusalem, they'll not only have the Corinthian gift, but he said they'll have a sample of Corinthian believers. And he said, those men that are sent with the gift, he said, they're going to look after the delivery of it, they're going to look after the safe passage of it, and he said, those men are going to be approved by letter. Now, if what I said was true, and it certainly is, that this gift would be accumulation of the assemblies of Asia, Great Jerusalem, Macedonia, Achaia, and Galatia. You can be sure that when they got it all put together, there was some size of a gift. And the Apostle Paul was very, very particular to have everything absolutely above board. He said, I want everything to be seen so that there'll be nobody in any doubt that I didn't help myself to it. And he said, there's a massive amount of money. And he said, I don't want anybody to suspicious. Hey, that boy was around the whole world there, and he gathered up handfuls of money here there, and he has started his own nest, and he's bringing the rest to work now, and pretending to be a big fat. He says, you stand representative, so that the thing will be absolutely beyond. Maybe you know we could learn a little bit from that as well. It's one thing to have gifts accumulated, but you know, the administration of what is given is very important. I know that many dear people have given sacrificially. And then they were never just too sure what became of. And they never really got any clear account of how it was handled. And after they had given it in, they were never given any assurance of exactly what happened to it. In this very same connection later on in the next epistle, the Apostle Paul says, he says, I want to tell you, he says, there are two men coming just to look after this. And he said, the reason we're sending two men is for this reason, this purpose, that we have to provide things on it, not only in the sight of God, but also in the sight of men. Now I know, dear brethren, you're experts in administration and organization here, but there are cases where it's not just so carefully done. And many times, dear brethren, say, after that, the Lord knows it's done. Glory to the Lord knows. That's not enough. That's not enough. when it comes to handling what other people have given, it's not enough that the Lord knows what's done with. They should know it well. Providing things honor in the sight of God and also in the sight of man. And he didn't only appeal, he made the appeal for the gift in verse 1. He mentioned the accumulation of the gift in verse 2, but he tells us that approved men are going to look after the administration of this gift, and everything will be done in such a way that it will be absolutely worthy of the work of the law. So that's only, we've only managed to get into the chapter very, very greatly, and that's what I'm hoping to do. Nothing very modest aim in the meeting. You have been through all the theological difficulties of the chapter, and that will save me any headaches taking time to explain them. We're just going to go through the rest of the verses. Tomorrow night we'll be taking a look at Paul's calendar and Paul's colleagues. And we'll take a look in the later part of the chapter about Paul's charges. There's more than for Wednesday night, I better not tell you now, in case you wouldn't come back. And all of those things are different aspects of the multifaceted work of the Lord. The Lord encourages to be up for His glory and salvation. Our Father, we bow in the precious name of our Lord Jesus to thank you again for all that thou hast done for us. So we know that thou hast been working in a marvelous way. We thank thee delightedly for the great work that was done upon the cross. We could never have done that work, but we bless thee for Him who finished for thy glory. We thank thee for the work of thy Spirit that has touched so many lives. And we bless thee for all that thou art doing in the world, even in this present day. And we ask, Lord, that thou would help us to make our contribution in a simple and scriptural way. We thank thee for opportunities that thou dost give us, for situations of need that we are allowed to see, and other situations of need that we are allowed to hear about. All of them providing opportunities to share what thou hast given to us. We pray that thou would enable us to take advantage of these occasions as they arise, so that we may be enabled to see thy work advance in various parts of the world and in various ways for the salvation of souls and the edification of thy people. We thank you for the assembly here. We thank you for all the sacrifice to come to this meeting. We ask for great grace and help for these 2 nights before us. Grant that there will be profit for the souls of all who will attend, and we ask for safety in making our way home in the precious name of the Lord. I'm going to sing a verse of 206 then. Do you often sing it here, but it'll do us tonight. 206, just the first verse. Through the work we are servants of God, let us follow the path that our Master has drawn. Just verse number 1 in the chorus of number 206, and he may stand the same.